Welcome to The Independent Entrepreneur, available online at www.indiebizshow.com. My name is Sean Salisbury. Today we're talking with Gene Maroney, president of Thinking Directions, a company that offers workshops and materials that help entrepreneurs and artists think through various issues they face in business and in the creative process. From being stuck on a project and not knowing what to do next, to feeling completely overwhelmed with the tasks you have, to dealing with the same problem over and over that just doesn't seem to go away, Gene offers tools and methods to break through these common pitfalls and traps and helps us think through them to get the job done. And with that, we turn to Gene Maroney, who is joining us today via Skype from New York City. We start with the same question we ask all our guests, which is, what was your first meaningful job and how would it influence your future career?
Well, I think that would be the first job that I had out of MIT, which was as an electrical engineer working on an adaptive optics system. And it was a really fun company to work for. It was a 40-person company when I joined. It doubled in size and then tripled in size while I was there. And while I was working for them, I got to do all kinds of EE work, from software to analog to digital.
What's EE work?
Sorry, electrical engineering work.
Oh, okay.
I was working with sensors and electro-optics and digital and analog. I got to work on the whole complex system. But most importantly, I got to work on a state-of-the-art field experiment in adaptive optics, which is a technology that's now used on all telescopes. All new telescopes have adaptive optics technology in them. And what it is that when you're looking at stars, air between you and the stars is actually affecting the resolution that you can see them. And what adaptive optics does is it measures those aberrations and corrects for them with a very complicated sensor and mirror system. And I was on the team that got the first one of these systems to work at the Starfire Optical Range in Albuquerque, New Mexico, in 1989. And it was really exciting. There was a little bit of a feeling of the Manhattan Project kind of thing there, where you're doing something for the first time that you see that this technology could revolutionize something. And in fact, it has revolutionized the field of astronomy. I had a great time working on this. I was, a young kid, really just thrown into this very interesting advanced project. And what I really took from it was that the leader of that project, a man named Bob Fugate, was the thing that held it all together. He had a vision, which I really only realized 15 years later when I heard all of the later advancements, but he had a vision of what this technology would do, and he saw that it was possible to do it. And, of course, he had the support of people who were funding it, but it was his passion that brought the team together, that got us focused, got it working. And I looked at him and I said, I should have the same kind of passion about my job that he has about his. And that started a process, actually about a 2 or 3 year process of figuring out what I really wanted to do, because I had picked electrical engineering because I was good at math and science. I hadn't picked it because it was fun, it was interesting, I liked solving the problems, but I didn't have any particular passion for my work. And working with Bob Fugate on that project opened my eyes to what a career can be.
No, that's great. That's really interesting. And let's jump right into thinking tactics now, which is a very different kind of product and business that you're doing. So why don't you tell us a little bit about thinking tactics and how you transitioned and found this as something that you are passionate about and that kind of thing.
Thinking Tactics is the name of my main product, which is an all-day workshop on thinking tactics, which are techniques you can use to help you solve problems faster and make better decisions and communicate more effectively. What it really is, it's ways to get leverage so that you can get all that wonderful experience and knowledge that's tucked away in your subconscious data banks out and into a thinking process in an orderly way so that you can actually take advantage of it. One of the courses I've taught, I titled Tap Your Own Brilliance, because I really think that's what this is about. It's about how to leverage things that you already know when you're trying to figure out something new. And that is, in a certain sense, very far from electrical engineering. And in another sense, everything I know about thinking tactics I learned at the Starfire Optical Range. Because really, I do think that what I'm doing is taking a mindset, a can-do, problems are solvable mindset that I learned as an electrical engineer, and I certainly learned from the other engineers at Starfire Optical Range. And I'm generalizing that to tactics you can use, for example, for figuring out how to plan your day so you actually get the most important stuff done, or to plan a project so that you have something to show by the time of the deadline, or figure out how you're going to have a conversation with someone and have it go well as opposed to poorly. And I really think it's many of the things I learned as an engineer that I'm teaching, only in a way that I think is accessible to, actually I'm certain is accessible to a non-technical audience.
So how did you get into this? I mean, this is very different from your other career. How did that arise for you and that kind of thing?
Well, I literally took a year to figure out what I wanted to do. I was working as an engineer actually at the SOR, and I still enjoyed doing that work, but I knew I needed to change. And I gave myself the assignment to think about that. At the same time, I'd gotten very interested in Ayn Rand, who I know you're also very interested in Ayn Rand.
Sure.
And the truth is, she opened up the humanities for me. When I was in college, I didn't even consider taking humanities courses except for literature and history. Those were the only things I was interested in. I didn't take any philosophy classes. I didn't take any psychology classes. I just thought it was all hot air, and I was not interested. And she opened that up for me as a place where you could think logically and clearly and in depth. And once I realized that was possible, I realized I was actually very interested in philosophy and psychology, and particularly in the process of thinking. And I took a little bit of time to decide what aspect of that I was interested in. And at one point, I wondered if I wanted to go into epistemology, which is the theory of how do you know what you know. The truth is that that wasn't engineering related enough for me. I realized that I was interested in how do you think, well, I was interested in the psychological side, or to use a term that Ayn Rand used, psychoepistemological. What is the actual way that you run your brain? You've got this information you have. There's an interaction between your conscious mind and this data that is stored that needs to be brought up from the subconscious. And I decided I wanted to understand that process and how you use that in thinking. When I started, it was actually rather vague, but I decided I was going to go to graduate school in psychology. And believe it or not, I took one class, one introductory class in psychology at the University of New Mexico, and did very well in my GREs and got accepted at Carnegie Mellon into the psychology graduate student program.
Wow.
Yeah, and at that point, I thought I would be an academic.
So how did you transition then? You obviously, thinking tactics is a more practical application of perhaps epistemology or that kind of thing. Can you talk about how the idea of doing seminars and teaching came about?
The short version is that it came about because none of the other more clear-cut career options seemed to be right for me. So basically, I spent 2 years in academia and got a master's degree and decided that was not what I wanted. At which point the question became, well, if you're going to do this, what are you going to do? And fortunately, I was in a position where my husband gave me free rein to try to experiment with a business, and teaching seemed to be the obvious thing. I thought I knew something about thinking at that point, but when I started, my first people that I gave, I started out by teaching one-on-one tutorials for $10 a tutorial in 1998, and I didn't know if I really knew enough to start a business at that point. I found out within 3 months that I knew enough that the six people who started with me in those first tutorials loved it, and I got from that the confidence that I had something that was of objective value to teach someone else. And that was really, it started with an experiment. I was not sure how to make a career, and it didn't seem like there was any place I could go and be hired and do what I saw I wanted to do. So by default, I needed to make my own business.
Great, great. Let's take a jump into some of the concretes here. Who are your customers, you know, who are taking these courses from you? What kind of problems do they have? I'm assuming most of them are business people. So can you talk about that a little bit?
The classes that I teach now, which are a little bit different from what I taught when I first started, are targeted toward a general business audience. And the people who self-select for them are managers, entrepreneurs, engineers, writers, and actually artists. The people who self-select for them are people who know that they think for a living and are aware that they have a process. And those people recognize when there's a class called Thinking Tactics, hey, I have tactics. I wonder what I could do to improve the tactics I have. So that is, in one sense, that's one part of my target market. They're the people who find me. When they find out about me, they say, ah, this is something that is relevant for me. I have a second target market, which is the more lucrative part of the business, is the corporate workshop.
Oh, okay.
And so really all of the public workshops and individual clients, that's an important part of the business, but that gets the word out to people who are interested. And then some of those people are managers at a company where they're very interested in having active, independent thinkers working for them. And they bring me in to teach my Thinking Tactics workshop to a, you know, a group of 30 people because they want those people to be encouraged that they have the skills. I mean, I don't teach anybody how to think. People who come to my classes are adults. They already know how to think. And what I teach them is how to use what they're doing right in the times when they're thinking and it's going fairly smoothly, how to use those tools that they're already using some of the time to use them more generally on the cases where they're feeling stuck. Because the truth is, we all have a lot of the tactics you need to be successful, but people don't have it named and conceptualized, and they don't realize that something they do in one situation would work in another.
No, that's a great, you said something really interesting that people get stuck in their thinking. And I think I find that with myself a lot. I'm thinking about perhaps, you know, how do I market the independent entrepreneur show? And I do all the things I can. And then I feel like, oh gosh, golly, I'm stuck. I don't know what to do next. So do you have specific tactics to help somebody like me or anybody out there who feels like they're stuck in a rut, they don't know which direction to go next, to help them get out of that?
Sure. The first thing I would say is that it's important to diagnose the exact symptoms that you have. So you described this in a couple of different ways, and let me ask you which one matches the most.
Okay.
Are you now stopped and paralyzed and you feel like you can't take a step forward?
Not necessarily. I think I feel more like I'm not sure what the next best step is for me to do in terms of using the best of my time.
Right. So you're actually, I would classify this under confusion. So you have some ideas of things you could do.
Right.
But you're not sure how to sort them out, in effect. You kind of know you need to know the best use of your time, but you're not sure how that fits. You have perhaps questions and objections. Whenever you think, well, I should do this, well, then some objection occurs to you. That kind of thing.
Right.
Is that accurate?
Right, correct.
Let me say something at the meta level and then address this particular issue. It's important to know what kind of problem you have. Confusion is different from paralysis, and both of those are different from blankness. Confusion is a form of overload, but overload can be either confusion or just too many things to do, or it could be emotional overload. And depending on exactly what the symptoms of your mental suffering are, a different tactic is going to be appropriate. And so what I teach in my class is I teach both the symptoms and the tactics so that you can diagnose the problem and then use something that's appropriate. So in the case of confusion, what I would say is that this is something that happens when, you know, ignorant people aren't confused. This means that you actually have quite a bit of information. You aren't sure how to put it all together here. And the three-step technique I recommend for clearing confusion is first to consolidate what you know. And so I would actually recommend that you spend a little bit of time thinking on paper, which is one of my big techniques, thinking about what do you know about the question of what should I be doing next? Part of that might be a list of possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that might be risks or difficulties associated with them. And I would say, what do you know? What do you need to know? Because almost certainly there are some gaps in your knowledge or else it would be obvious to you. And also, what else is relevant? Because when you're confused, it means that there are things coming around. You just don't know how to put it all together. And what you need to do is first lay out all that information without trying to get an answer. The general thing when you're overloaded is you want to try not to do too many things at once. So you want to first assemble information or collect information out of your data banks before trying to analyze it. And so once you have that kind of laid out in front of you, then I would have you go back through it and test your assumptions, because when you're confused, there's almost always some untruth in there. There's some hidden assumption that's getting in your way. So for example, here's something that you might find if you go back through just even what you said to me. Do you have to know the best next step? Or do you just need to know a good next step?
Right. No, that's a good point.
Right. And that's the kind of thing that when you actually write out to yourself, well, I can't decide whether to do this or this because, you know, this might not be better than that. And if you, the way I'm saying it, I'm putting it in a sort of semi-hysterical way, but when you complain, seriously, when you complain to yourself on paper and then you go back and you read it, you say, well, that's kind of silly. Some hidden assumption was built in there, and it's very helpful to have first just put it down the way you see it and then go back and look at it with a fishy eye and say, is that literally true? Is that the only way to look at it? You know, what else is going on there? And you kind of give yourself a hard time. But once you've done that second pass through, you can almost always then sum up, well, what is a good next step? And that's the thing I teach in my class, is that you don't need to know everything to clear confusion. You just need to know a good next step. And this is a general principle of thinking. Thinking is an ongoing process. You think in order to figure out what to do. Thinking is a means to an end. The reason you're trying to get this new piece of knowledge is in order to achieve some larger goal. And as soon as you can figure out the next step, you're free to then act. And once you act, of course, you learn more things. So, for example, with the next step for marketing your business, I mean, I don't know if you want to do a little mini consulting in the middle of the interview.
No, I think we did that enough. So,
okay, fair enough. But the point is that if you went with your best idea, you would almost certainly learn something immediately from having pursued that step, which will then give you more information about whether to continue pursuing it, or maybe you'll discover that there was a mistake that you couldn't have, or an issue that you couldn't have foreseen.
No, that's excellent advice. And, you know, just hearing you talk about it makes it seem a lot more like, wow, this is something I can actually get over and do. So you said in terms of forms of getting stuck, there's confusion, paralysis, blankness. Are there any other kinds of ways that people get stuck, or other problems that people have that maybe it's not getting stuck, it's something else?
There are all degrees of getting stuck, I guess is what I'd say.
Okay.
When you say getting stuck, it makes it sound like you're actually stopped and not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not always the symptom of it. True paralysis is true getting stuck, I would say. And that's sort of the end of the line on any different problem you have. If you keep going without fixing the problem, you eventually get paralyzed, because when you're paralyzed, you think your task is impossible.
Sure. Or I think sometimes people feel overwhelmed, like there's so much to do.
Right. So what I was going to say, why don't I just give you a list of some of the things that I talk about?
Oh, great.
The simplest problem you can have in thinking is that you're being easily distracted. And when you're being a little easily distracted, then you need some way to be clear on your goal. Actually, I think thinking on paper is the number one solution when you're feeling distracted. And what it is you need to get more goal-directed and more oriented and more focused on what you're actually doing so that those distractions don't pull you off. The next kind of bigger class of problem you can have is the various forms of overload or blankness, which interestingly, overload and blankness are essentially the same problem. You have either too much information coming up or too little information coming up from your data banks. In order to be able to think effectively, you need kind of just, it's like, you know, the three bears. You need just the right amount of information coming up so that you can bring it up and judge it and then go on to the next cycle in a kind of fluid way. And as I said, there are various kinds. I put overwhelmed, I would say, would be probably some combination of simple overload, too many things to do, and maybe emotional overload. When you're feeling intense emotions, that takes up all your mental space, and that'll shut you right down if you're feeling that. And there are specific tactics for both of those. For overload, you need to get the issue off your mind. For intense emotions, the thing that calms emotions is understanding them, identifying what they are and why you feel them, and that, in effect, answers the signal that the emotion is giving you and lets your subconscious relax and stop that intensity. But those are all, that's sort of a middle class of problem you can have. And then the third class of problem you can have is, I would say, some kind of goal conflict, some issue wherein you're trying to figure something out, but there's some misconception in how you've set your path. And this manifests itself in all forms of floundering, going in circles, which means you don't know what direction your goal is. It could be thrashing, which means you're going back and forth between two goals. Flailing, I have names for all of these. Flailing, which is the feeling of hitting your head against the wall. Mm-hmm. There's various kinds of avoidance things where you, instead of actually moving toward the goal, you're running away from the goal, which obviously means there's something you're afraid of there. And one of the things I teach here is that you can often tell from your own behavior what it is that's wrong with the goal. Your strange behavior is actually evidence of some mistake in setting your goal. And so the thing to do is to actually really look at, well, what is it that I'm doing? What is the symptom? What are the characteristics and symptoms of my thinking task that I think, you know, are indicating to me I'm not making reasonable progress toward the goal?
Great, great. So let's switch gears a little bit here and talk. Let's talk about marketing a little bit and your business in particular. You said you started it in 1998 and that you do some seminars for companies as well as individuals. Can you talk about your marketing strategy? What's worked for you and what hasn't? How are you marketing your business now?
Okay. Well, I essentially am trying to use the funnel approach to marketing. The idea is that you have some very free or low-cost way to interest a large number of people in what you're doing. And for me, that's a free email newsletter that I offer and a free teleclass that I offer every couple of months. And the idea is to cast a wide net. Something I'm not doing, but which I intend to do, is some more, you know, to the extent you can get any publicity, you then try to get people interested in these free products or very, very low cost products that they then get into your system and you can then send them offers for higher cost products. And I haven't completely implemented it. I've got one small product available for sale and another medium price product, which I hope will be available for sale soon. But the idea is that you want to have a series of products that can escalate into someone coming to my live workshop, which is a little more expensive. And I also have a membership program where people who have attended my workshop, the people who really lap it up and really enjoy it, can become part of a membership program I have, which I've actually just christened the Thinking Lab. And with that, they pay a monthly fee and they get email newsletters from me and on a weekly basis and monthly teleclasses. And I have a website with a lot of additional material that they have a passworded access to that. And so the idea is that I have products at every price point, and this is really for the individual market. The idea is that I can have a lot of people interested at the low price points and then market to the people who have raised their hand as expressing interest for the higher price. And my goal is to try to fill in that whole product area to create what they call as an information empire. Now, and through that, my basic strategy for getting the corporate business is through the individual business, making connections and then finding these managers who then are interested in bringing me in to their companies to give the class or give some versions of the class, various kinds, to their people.
So you're actually marketing to perhaps existing people who came to your individual classes, and that you do find that that is a good way to get people to bring you in for a corporate gig?
Yes, that's essentially, I mean, not entirely. Let's see, I'm trying to think. I think with one exception, all the corporate work I've gotten has been someone who has taken a class with me prior to then bringing me in to do the corporate work. Now, of course, one of the things that I'd like to get into my product pipeline is a book. Once I have a book out, then I suspect that that would also be a lead into corporate work. But given what I have now, it's really the in-person presentation that does that.
Great, great. So what were some of the biggest milestones in growing your business? Can you tell us about how you've grown it and some of the growing pains you've experienced?
I do feel like there have been growing pains. And for me, partly that's because I did not actually come into the business with a truly entrepreneurial mentality. You know, I started the business because this seemed like the only option for me, as opposed to, I think, some of the other people you've interviewed who knew that they wanted to be entrepreneurs and were looking for a great business idea. I knew that I wanted to do this intellectual work and that I needed to turn it into a paying career in some way. So my interest was always sort of over on the intellectual side. And to really get my head around what it takes to run a business, there's some growing pains involved in that.
Sure.
And I would say the biggest thing for me was really coming to terms with what it means to market to customers. And I've had, I would say, a revolution in understanding that, you know, you're not going out there trying to get people to pay you money. If you have that mindset, you're doomed. You really do need to understand your market. I didn't grasp this principle at all when I started. People would tell me that I needed to know my target market and I needed a niche. And I just didn't believe them. I thought everybody needs to know how to think. Therefore, every adult person in the world is my target market. And it would be a mistake to try to narrow it down. But I have since realized that that is totally wrongheaded. You can't be intelligible to the whole universe. You have to figure out, in my case, really what I'm looking for is the early adopters. I'm looking for people who self-identify as a thinker and are interested in their mental processes. And that is a much, much smaller population. And once you get clear on who they are, the other half of it is, you change your mindset from, oh, I'm trying to get them to buy my things, to, oh, I want to have an interaction with that customer. You know, the thing that I found that has radically changed my approach to business is realizing I am looking for eager thinkers who enjoy talking about their mental processes. And what I am looking for is people who want to join my thinking lab. I like talking with people about these things. I like having a group of 30 people who want to hear my latest ideas and want to give me feedback and want to tell me how they use my tactics. And once you recognize it in that regard as a trait of your really wanting to have that connection with that person, you're looking for that kind of person. And yes, there is money involved in this trade because you're off, you know, you're trading value for value. But it becomes not about the money, but about what is the value that's going to be exchanged here. And it completely changes the way that you look at the interaction with customers and look at people who, say, are not potential customers. You know, I used to always be a little kind of wondering, why are these people not interested in what I'm doing? Shouldn't they be interested in what I'm doing? And, you know, that is a bad attitude. And now there's no emotional negative. It's just too bad. Okay, I go on and look for the next person who is that I'm going to get excited about.
No, that's great. That's good advice too. Another question here. Every business has a core set of metrics that they look at on a regular basis to measure their success and whatnot. What are you looking at to measure your success in your company?
The things that I look at are the amount of material that I've developed on the intellectual side and the corporate business that I book. Those are really the two things that are, I think, the measures of whether I'm being productive.
Do you set goals for yourself on the intellectual side in terms of how much you need to create or write or that kind of thing?
Yes and no. One of the things that I've learned about developing intellectual work is that you need to be very careful about setting goals because they have to be really realistic. And so it is entirely realistic for me to send a newsletter every week with a new tip to my Thinking Lab participants and a teleclass actually 3 or 4 weeks I do for them. You know, that is a sustainable pace. I always have new material for that. Those are somewhat informal, and so I know that in a certain number of hours I can produce a newsletter or a teleclass. And it's all about the standard. So there I do actually set goals for that. I find with the book, it's a higher standard of clarity. When you're writing a book, you're trying to have, in my case, 12 chapters integrated around a theme. If you want to be a good book, it needs to actually be interesting every page, so you turn the page. And it needs to make sense, and what you say in chapter 1 can't be contradicted or even disconnecting from chapter 7. And it's just a much more challenging problem. And for me, this first book of mine is also my in a sense, my dissertation, in the sense that this is where I'm learning to write at that level. And, you know, it will be done when it's done. And every time I think, oh, it's going to be done by such and such a date, what happens is then some problems ensue and I get discouraged. And if you're discouraged, it's actually quite hard to write when you're discouraged. And so I had to use my own tactics to discover that in these cases, I actually could not set that hard a goal. For that project, I had to set an open-ended goal because the closed-ended goal interfered with the actual execution of the project. And I do think projects come in both flavors and that you need to be able to recognize that difference.
Sure. No, that's definitely true.
So the one thing I would say is I do give myself a metric for how many hours I put in on the book.
Oh, okay.
So for the other intellectual products, I count the products, but for the book, I count the hours, knowing that if I keep putting in the hours, I will finish.
So what is the long-term strategy and vision for your company? Do you have a mission statement?
Actually, I think probably not in the same way that another company would have. My long-range vision concerns the intellectual work that I want to do. And again, this is because I consider myself primarily an intellectual and secondarily an entrepreneur. And so the long-range vision for the business is I want to have it set up such that as I move on to the next subject, I productize. So maybe I do have a vision for the business. I productize what I've done. So Thinking Tactics is fairly mature at this point. And when this book comes out, I will not only have a version out on CD, but I'll also have a train the trainer program. And that will become something that I don't do so often, but maybe other people offer that workshop. And I'll be able to move on to the next intellectual subject that I've got on the agenda, which is probably going to be mental calisthenics. And in a certain sense, I think of Thinking Tactics as something that is more marketable than some of these other things. And so like mental calisthenics, I'm going to need a big funnel of people who've been interested in Thinking Tactics, and then some fraction of them will be interested in this next more technical and more long-term training. So maybe I do have a business plan.
Well, that's good. That's great. So do you foresee sometime like in the future having other people teaching these courses and whatnot? Or it sounds like you're more focused on your own intellectual development than doing that kind of thing. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah, well, what I'd like to do is I'd like to have a train-the-trainer program and license the materials. I'd definitely like to do that. I think, you know, I've thought about what's involved to do that and to make sure that the classes are good. And I think that I need the book to be able to ensure that. I think if I have the book and the workshop and the CDs, then I could then have a train-the-trainer program and someone who had been interested enough to read the book, listen to the CDs, take the workshop, and then come to a train-the-trainer, I could really get them up to speed on how to teach the same things that I'm teaching. I think that answers your question.
Absolutely, yeah. What mistakes have you made in running your business, and how did you fix them, and what lessons did you learn?
Well, the big thing that I've learned that I'm still fixing to some extent is that you need a marketing infrastructure. This is actually a concept I got from a woman named Marcia Yudkin. The idea is that when you're trying to sell something, you develop certain marketing things. And I already have actually a number of different products. If you count all the different things that you can get from me on my website, you need to have, in effect, a turnkey system in place so that if someone orders a pamphlet, you don't have to think about it. You just, you know, hit an email or do something and it goes out to them. It can't be that you reinvent the wheel. Or if I give a public workshop, I mean, there are 50 things that have to be done to make that happen, including, you know, logistics of the event and whatever. And you can't be reinventing that. You have to have a system in place so that it becomes trivially easy to do the third, fourth, fifth, 10th, 20th, 30th public workshop. And the thing that I didn't realize is you need to have thought about that at a level that it's easy to maintain. And that's why this idea of an infrastructure is so helpful. You need to have, say, the database in place and the shopping cart tools in place to make all of this easy so that as you're developing new products, you do not have to worry about the old products. For example, I have a VA who helps me with certain routine parts of the business.
What's a VA?
Oh, sorry about that. It's a virtual assistant.
Oh, okay.
So this is someone who I hire. I think she keeps track of her time to the 5 minutes, which is just wonderful. And I send her all kinds of little picayune things. Like I write a newsletter and I email it to her and I say, would you please send this to such and such list and include the such and such announcement and the whatchamacallit. And she put, you know, it takes 10 minutes to actually go and format all that and put it in and queue it up and make sure it's right. And I don't do that 10 minutes. My VA Joyce does it. And that kind of well-oiled machine makes such a difference. Otherwise, if you don't have something like that, you can't grow. You can't go on and do the next thing that you need to do because you're spending so much time just trying to keep the other plate spinning. That's the big thing that I've learned and that I'm working on. And now as I bring something else online, I think of it in terms of what is the infrastructure I need to support this and make it easy to bring this product online and keep it going.
Great, great. No, that's very interesting, the idea of a virtual assistant. Can you tell us what leadership means to you? And I know you deal with a lot of people coming in from businesses who are project leaders or heads of companies and whatnot. Can you talk about that a little bit, leadership?
I don't consider myself an expert on leadership by any means. But I think what a leader does, the leader is the person who has the clear goal in mind and communicates it to the rest of the people. And then helps, if they're a leader and a manager, what the manager does is help coordinate the activity so that that goal is actually achieved, so that the different people's work is actually adding up and moving toward the goal instead of working at cross purposes. I do think the thing that makes or breaks leaders is whether they can communicate that goal and get the other people on the team to share that goal. And if they can, the team just goes, this is again, the person I think about in terms of leadership is Bob Fugate, the person at the Starfire Optical Range that I worked for. And he created this environment, looking back at it, he created an environment where each of us was able to work full tilt on our problem, our part of the problem, and it all added up and none of it was wasted effort. It was partly his ability to help us figure out what we needed to do, and it was partly his ability to make a space that was clear for us because he fought a number of political battles to be able to ensure that we didn't have to fight those battles, that we weren't distracted by things unrelated to the job. That is a real skill. That's a real skill.
Absolutely. And that's a great example too. What advice can you offer to anyone who's thinking about starting their own business?
Be prepared to learn whatever you need to learn. I think when you start your own business, you need to commit to being able to wear all those hats because the truth is you are responsible for the bottom line. You're going to have to make those decisions and you have to come up to speed on finance and marketing and logistics and not just the thing that perhaps interested you in the business in the first place. You really need to be willing to learn all those other things. I think that's why entrepreneurs are attracted to my thinking tactics class. When you dive into starting your own business, it comes at you from all directions, and you really need to be able to turn on your mind and think about a problem that is unfamiliar and perhaps uncomfortable, and you need to be able to do it now. And that's really the kind of thing that I'm hoping to offer with my workshops.
So, Jean, tell us how people can find you and Thinking Tactics.
My company is Thinking Directions. So the website is www.thinkingdirections.com. And I noticed you said, how can you find out about Thinking Tactics? I'm happy to say I also own the domain name Thinking Tactics, which will bring you right to one of the page for my public workshops on Thinking Tactics. And that is thinkingtactics.com. If you would prefer to email me, you can reach me at jm@thinkingdirections.com.
Thanks a lot, Jean, for taking the time out of your day to talk with us. I really enjoyed learning about your business, and I'm looking forward to your next course. And we wish you a profitable future.
Thank you, Sean, and the same to you.
Thank you for listening to The Independent Entrepreneur. The show's theme song, Tommy in the Morning, is by Pete Hutlinger and used with his permission. Visit his website at www.petehutlinger.com. All other content on this show is copyright 2010 by Sean Salisbury. We hope you've enjoyed this interview. For more information and to listen to other interviews, please visit www.indiebizshow.com. That's www.indiebizshow.com.